So dear listeners, that was our children's hour, and now move on to our next segment on Thursday Live. A merry, merry, merry Christmas, a millionth time from the most happening place on the planet. Yes, Prashanthi today is the most happening place on the planet, as it is every day, and today it's special. The Divine Hamlet is converted into a mini world, isn't it? That is so special about Christmas in Prashanthi, isn't it? There are so many things that are unique, but one thing is you not only find here people of all colors and from all nations, but also you find here people from different faiths. I do not know where else you will find Hindus and Muslims and Sikhs and Parsis celebrating Christmas with the same joy and vigor as they would celebrate Shivratri or Buddha Purnima or Guru Nanak Jayanti, and it happens only in this most happening place on the planet. If you love Swami, you love Jesus, you love Allah, you love Buddha, you love Nanak, you love every form of divinity, and you see divinity in every speck of creation. I remember Professor Kasturi, the biographer of Bhagwan Baba in Satyam Shum Sundaram. He writes how when he reached Prashanthi Nilayam in November 1949, it was 9:30 a.m. in the morning, and he says, I found an atmosphere of exaltation pervading the Mandir. That was the time when the Prashanthi Nilayam Mandir was halfway through its completion, and everyone was talking about Swami going to the river that evening. So some friends congratulated Professor Kasturi on his good luck, you know, for that day Swami was supposed to go to the river, to the sands, and you know, that was a very, very rare occasion because Swami was not going so often to the river. So at 5:30 p.m., Swami came out of his room and he walked briskly at the head of this big group of devotees, and you know, he was scattering joy all around him, and with a joke, with a pleasantry, with the inquiry and all that. And Swami went to the sands, and as he trudged along the sands, he sought out a place that was clean and dry. And after proceeding for about 100 or 200 yards, he decided on a site, and they all sat around him, the men on one side, the women on the other side, as it always happens in Mandir. And then Swami waited till all the oldest and the weakest of the devotees reached the spot, and they were all comfortably seated. And then, in reply to a question from one devotee, whether action or karma has to be given up to attain moksha, liberation, Swami gave a very sweet and simple exposition on this. So a devotee asked, if we have to give up action to attain liberation, and listen to what Bhagwan said. Swami said, sublimation of all karma by the attitude of samarpana to the Lord is what is needed. Sublimation of all action by the attitude of surrender to the Lord. Swami said, once you do that, then the fruits of your action will not be attached to you. And when that happens, then your action, the karma, will lose its power to tighten the bonds of attachment. It is these bonds of attachment which give you sorrow and rebirth. Once you surrender every action to the Lord, then there will be no attachment to the action, and then there would be no birth, there would be no death. And Swami said, devotion without action is like a basement without a wall. An action without devotion is like a wall without a basement. I should repeat this. Swami said, bhakti devoid of karma is like a basement without a wall. Devotion without action is like a basement, but there is no wall. And if you do action but no devotion, it's wall but without a foundation, without a basement. And Professor Kasturi says, you know, this was this initial days of him coming to Prashanti. And he says, I was so struck by the universality of Swami's mission and message that he became completely glued to Bhagwan. He was struck by this universality of Bhagwan's message. And then during the discourse, Swami said, I am the servant of everyone. You can call me by any name and I will respond, because all names are mine. I have no one particular name. And then Swami also mentioned, even if I am discarded by you, I shall be behind you. Even if I am discarded by you, I shall be behind you. That is his love. And then Swami also mentioned, in my view, there are no atheists. There are no atheists. All are existing by and for the Lord. Just like if you deny the sun, it will not make the sun disappear. The sun will always be there. It is for us to one day or the other realize it. And the same way Swami said, there is no one who is an atheist. So when Professor Kasturi heard all these words from Bhagwan about how every name belongs to him, how the Lord is a servant of everyone, how there is no one who is not a believer of God, and how no one can ever discard him, that is when he felt the universality, the powerful universality of Bhagwan's mission and message, and all the questions in his mind settled down. And he says, that is what illumined all the shadows in my heart. As I read this, I thought, it is this that happens to so many devotees that come to Prashanti Nilayam. When they listen to Bhagwan's message, their mind becomes still. All the cobwebs in their mind is cleared away. And these questions in their heart is answered. And that is when the heart opens. That heart opening is what happens in Prashanti Nilayam. And that is the reason why people from all lands, from all nations, belonging to different cultures and religions, come to this divine hamlet. Just yesterday, December 24th morning, I was talking to Miss Alma Baddings, who has been coming to Bhagwan for 25 years, almost every year, since 1985, from Netherlands. And she has had the chance to be the conductor of many choirs in front of Swami, and for many years, more than 10 years, she was the conductor and the organizer of the children's choir. And when I asked her, how does it feel for her now in Prashanti Nilayam, she said, for her, the greatest experience in her life is walking up to the Samadhi. Just listen to this small clip.
To the fact that Swami is not there, but they have the possibility to go up to Samadhi, which I feel is an individual darshan. You can do your prayer, your devotion, express your devotion to Swami. And I mean, even the walk up to the Samadhi is so divine. And with that beautiful Sai Gayatri mantra, I mean, that would be the only reason to come here again, I think. What I feel is that Swami talks to me more through the Vedas, and the bhajans has been deepened in me too. It's like he just surrounds you with his light energy and penetrates in your heart very easy.
So that was Miss Alma Baddings. He just penetrates you with his light energy. That's what happens. She says, for her, as you heard, just the experience of every day walking up to the Samadhi is so divine that She will come every year from Netherlands only for this experience. If you have seen the Radio Sai website today, you would have found a special audio offering that we have made for this Christmas. And this audio offering says, "In the silent night, stars are shining bright. We can see the holy light in everybody's heart. We will keep thy holy light every moment, day and night. Every soul will feel thy light, thy love and light. Sing thy glory to feel thy love. Sing thy glory to feel thy love and to be thy love." Let me pray for you this audio offering. But here I have a request. Just close your eyes. Imagine the light of the Lord shining bright within you, glowing in you, comforting you, caressing you. that beautiful? Sing thy glory to feel thy love. Sing thy glory to spread his love. Sing thy glory to be thy love. In fact, the story of how this composition came about is also a very beautiful one. The tune and the lyrics are done by Brother Sai Kaustubh Dasgupta, who is a Radio Sai volunteer. And if you are someone who have read about his story, which we published some time back on our Radio Sai website, you would know who he is. He is a very, very blessed child of the Lord who does so much work with just two fingers that Bhagwan has blessed him with. No other limb of his body moves, but he moves your hearts to no end with his love for the Lord. I asked him how this composition came about, and so this is the story. Last year, he had done a beautiful wallpaper for Christmas. That wallpaper was a collage of myriad expressions of Swami. Swami smiling, Swami surprised, Swami silent, Swami gazing, Swami glowing, Swami gentle. And on top of all this, he had placed the characteristic Santa Claus's red cap. And beside this was another picture of Swami, where Swami was interacting with a little one dressed in Christmas red and white. And now below this, there was a little space, and that is where he wanted to write one line. Some words which would complete that art. So he thought long and hard about it, but nothing really came to his mind, nothing really appealed to his mind. So he let it go, he prayed to the Lord, and he quit that day. And the next morning, the first thought that enveloped him were these words: joy to the world, the Lord is come. He was so happy. He felt those lines were perfect. So all he did is he just changed it a bit. He made it joy to the world, our Sai has come, and he put those words in there, in that graphic, and to him it was perfect. He was so happy, glad it was over. On the morning of 24th, he now shared it with all of us in Radio Sai, so that we could post it on our Radio Sai Facebook page. And when I saw this, I immediately wrote back saying, "Oh Kaustubh, so you knew the theme of this year's Christmas decoration in advance." He said, "Brother, I had no clue. What are you talking about?" Then I told him that on top of the stage in Sai Kulwant Hall, there were these words, big, white and bright, "Joy to the world, the Lord has come." That is the theme of the Christmas decoration 2013. And when I told him this, he was speechless. He had tears in his eyes, and he just said, "How can I express my love? How can I express my gratitude to such a sweet Lord? See how he works. See how he makes his presence felt so powerfully, yet so silently." He was so much overwhelmed by love for Bhagwan that the next 5 minutes emerged this offering. Because Kaustubh sings, and the only way he could express his gratitude to Bhagwan was through a song, and this song emerged. And when I heard this, we thought this is something which we have to share to the world. And my colleague Anirudh, he did the music arrangement and the keyboard. Another Radio Sai volunteer, Vidya, she gave the voice, and see what a beautiful offering we have for all of us. Beautiful offering to place from all of us to Bhagwan on Christmas Day. The Lord never ceases to amaze you, isn't it? Yeah, the Lord never ceases to amaze you, because even now, I'm experiencing something like that. I'll tell you why. I was thinking of talking to a few people, you know, who have come from all over the world for this Christmas, just to capture this Christmas joy, so that we have these moments recorded, so that we can cherish and relish this year's Christmas feelings again and again. Another day, a kind devotee brought to the studio Mr. Neville Fredericks, who is a long-standing devotee of Bhagwan from Australia. And as I started talking to him, I felt what he was saying was so beautiful, just coming straight from the heart, and he was saying it so well. And I thought, this is something we have to share with the world, and we have to do it on Christmas Day, and Thursday Live happens to be on Christmas Day, so I requested him if he can come to the studios for this live show, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, and here, now, he's with me today. But the most amazing thing is, after I had fixed him for this, then he mentioned to me that he's actually one of the speakers for this year's Christmas. I had no clue. And I thought, so beautiful is it, isn't it? See how the Lord works. I'm so happy that we are now continuing from where we left off in Sai Kulwant Hall. So we have here today Mr. Neville Fredericks in this very special episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, coming to you straight from the heart of Prashanth Nilayam, from the studios of Radio Sai on this beautiful Thursday.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. So welcome to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 9:06, and as I mentioned, today is this special Christmas episode, and we're going to have this conversation with Mr. Neville Fredericks. Mr. Neville Fredericks has spent most of his life in public work, 50 years in service of local community. For 14 years, he was in a local government. For 7 years, he was the mayor of his district. He's a farmer, a businessman. He was the inaugural businessman of the year in Wollongong, the seaside city in New South Wales, Australia. Is the 10th largest city in Australia. And he has been a devotee of Bhagwan for 29 years, since 1985. Apart from leading a very active public life, he's also held many important positions in the Satya Sai organization. He was a regional chairman of Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, and later on he became the National Spiritual Coordinator, National Service Coordinator, Chair of National Council of Australia, Central Coordinator of this region, and now he is the chairman of Zone 3. Zone 3, as I mentioned, consists of Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, and he has been, as I mentioned, in public service for half a century. Even before he came to Bhagwan's fold, he was into service. He was in the Salvation Army for 14 years. He has served on many cooperative boards and service clubs. He was in the advisory board of the education program of the government. And besides all this, he's also a keen sports person, a surfer, rugby player, and so on. And perhaps that explains his youthful energy and his lively smile. So welcome, Mr. Fredericks, to the studios of Radio Sai for this special episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Bishu.
So thank you so much for being here. And I was listening to the talk that you gave in the Sai Kulwant Hall just a few minutes ago. And you started off saying, in Prashanth Nilayam, The first time you experienced Christmas as a truly sacred day was in Prashanth Nilayam.
Yes, that's very true.
Why did you say that?
Well, in the secular West in which I grew up, even though I grew up in a very Christian family, the whole process of Christmas has been overwhelmed by commercialization. The retail aspect of Christmas starts 2 or 3 months before, and it seems to swamp our awareness of the sacredness of Christmas. It overwhelms things, and the presents are there. It's all very positive in one sense, but it wasn't sacred. It wasn't a deep and moving spiritual time when we reverentially honoured the birth of Christ and celebrated the birth of Christ. And it wasn't until I came here.
So the sacredness, the inner significance of the festival was getting lost in so many other things.
That's very typical of the West at the moment. And it's not to say it's everywhere, but it's certainly pervading extensively. And the beauty of Christmas here is that the whole day, right from 6 a.m., 5:30, was committed to a celebration of Christ's birth. And we sang carols in a Nagasan Kirtan as we went around quite early. This was very beautiful and a first for me. And the beautiful plays and the beautiful choir singing would just bring me to tears. Great discourses by Swami. He's such a magnificent teacher. I mean, he's the teacher of teachers.
Yes.
And the company of all of the people. But more importantly for me was the simple fact that there were Buddhists and Hindus and Sikhs and Zoroastrians and Muslims all celebrating the birth of Christ. Now, this was a very powerful thing for me. And I learnt the true meaning of the phrase, Fatherhood of God and Brotherhood of Man, here at Prashanti.
Wow. Fantastic. That's what Prashanti stands for?
Yes, certainly.
If you were to cherish one moment again and again, again and again about this year's Christmas, the moment that you want to come to repeatedly from this year's experience of Christmas, what would that moment be?
I don't think there's one moment. Where Swami has taken me is that the whole of creation is the body of God. There is no place where God does not exist. And that we should see God in every person. I see here in Prashanti. I feel it here in Prashanti. I can feel the presence of divinity all around me through the beautiful smiles, the kindly gestures, the courteous speech, the beautiful singing. I just feel that God is alive when being expressed through all of the people who come here. You know, in truth, we are his messengers. It's when we express divine love. All love is divine love.
Yes.
For God is love.
Yes.
And when you come to this place, you feel a selfless love expressed all around you. You see it expressed as duty and discipline, or you see it expressed in a kindly gesture, or a sweet song, or committed selfless service. This, to me, is just one big expression of divine love. It's a way in which people are expressing their love for God.
Wow. I remember last year, after the Christmas, I had the chance to speak to two sisters from South Africa. One of them narrated how she came to Bhagwan very young, 22, or she was 20 or 22 something. And she was very reluctant to come to Prashantinilayam, and to cut the long story short, she comes here just to accompany her sister, and she says, I'm going back one session, you know, I'll just be there for a few hours and then I'm going back to Bangalore. I cannot be here. I don't want to come to this place and I don't believe in all these things. And she's come in the morning and sister says, fine, you just be there for 2-3 hours and if you don't like it, fine, we'll go back. And that morning, they had this Christmas carol practice sessions going on in the double-decker shed. So just to pass time, you know, she took her there. She was there for that 1 hour. And she says, just that experience was so moving for her that she decided to stay back. He said, I had never experienced so much love. I had not seen people from different countries, speaking different languages, but there is so much love in the practice session. And the practice session was just beginning. It was not as if they were singing all beautifully, you know. They were just getting into the groove. But that was such a powerful experience for her. So I can, when you say that, you know, this love is something which makes the whole experience of Christmas so special. It is not the decorations, it is not the carol singing, it is not the dramas, or it is not the talks, but what is the underlying thing which is making everything happen?
Yes.
I think that is a very special experience.
Yes. I also experienced that especially in my early years here, sitting in on the Christmas carols. I was routinely rendered to tears in bliss from the beauty of what I was hearing and the sweetness of the expression in the songs. It was just so moving. I mean, it's not in the instruments, it's in the voice. The voice is expressing the beauty of love.
Wow. Okay, now, Mr. Fredericks, I have a question. If I were to ask you, what are those three messages of Christ? Because in the talk you mentioned that you were brought up in a strong Christian tradition. So I'm sure you were exposed to the teachings in the Bible right from your childhood. So if I were to ask you, what are three potent messages from the Bible that got reinforced in you, that found a beautiful expression in your lives after you came to Swami? What would they be?
The first one would be love.
Mm-hmm.
In my Christian community, I did not find the quality of love that I found here, both directly from Swami, which is incomparable, or from his devotees here. There was a quality of love that was truly divine. It's very hard to put your finger on that because love is love, of course, but there's an intensity and a beauty. Love can be more intense and more selfless progressively. And of course, when you come to Prashanti, you have people who have been practicing selfless love for decades. And my goodness, you feel it. So I think, of course, a great Jesus was one of the greatest exponents of love in history. But to feel devotees express that love was just a new dimension for me. And it certainly gives great joy. One other aspect of love it's the universality of in Swami's message of love. Love expressed to everyone. I think in my upbringing we loved those family and close friends, and there didn't seem to be a compulsion to deeply love the people you just touched fleetingly. Whereas I accept in Swami's philosophy, Swami's teachings, that I should love everyone, unreservedly, for God resides in every human heart. And that additional dimension gave a richness to my life. In fact, Swami said in one of the early interviews, narrow, restricted love. He clenched his fists and then he opened his fingers and said, expansion love, expansion love, expansion love, beyond family, into society. into everyone that we meet. Now, it's part of my spiritual practice every day, every moment, to see love, to see God in the other. That's part of my efforts to try and hold a constant integrated awareness. If I pick on an exercise, and that is to see God in everyone I meet, then that's bringing that awareness of the all-pervasive God into the forefront of my mind. It's been a very joyful thing to do, because you create your own life experience, as Swami said, and if you approach someone in a loving way, the love will be returned. And you find that the whole of life is filled with love if you apply the teachings in that way.
Beautiful. Can I ask you to share one or two anecdotes of how this experience has been when you try to relate to someone as nothing but love in your professional life? Sometimes it can be very challenging. Sometimes you are in front of someone whom you generally probably cannot love. You feel the feelings that you get may not be so pleasant, but were you able to experience and practice love with a person like that also?
Swami asked me to do public work. So I went back into local government and became mayor again. I had been mayor 10 years earlier, but left when I became unwell. Now, on this occasion, I went into council and became mayor after coming to Swami. And I'd had momentous experiences, and so I set out to love all, serve all, mm-hmm. in a political environment.
Sometimes it can be very challenging.
And that meant loving the opposition.
Yes.
And I did, and I tried, and I really tried. Now, the opposition felt that was a free kick.
Yeah, and they would take advantage of you.
Yes, they were taking advantage of me. It was very interesting, and the more I tried to love all, the more I was being kicked. And I began to get confused about this, because I had deep belief in the truth of Swami's teachings. I believe every word he speaks is truth. So love all, serve all. So I didn't give up, but my confusion increased. And I came back to Prashanti, and Swami said a couple of very important things, and one of the most important lessons for me. Firstly, he said, always thinking spiritual, spiritual, spiritual. First common sense, then spiritual sense. You have to live in the world. And he knew that I had to be practical in this circumstance. That my efforts to love weren't being reciprocated with respectful conduct back. Their conduct was actually getting worse. But the most beautiful teaching I've had from Swami in all the interviews we had, in this state of confusion, Swami asked me, how do you love another? And he knew I was having difficulty with that. And he said, you must first have self-confidence.
Wow.
And how do you get self-confidence? You must live in harmony with your conscience. Now, that took me into a new realm. And I knew then that my personal conduct had to be exemplary, so that I could have self-confidence, that I could love myself for the goodness that I knew I was. And from there, my personality would be robust and unable to be knocked off course, because I knew who I was. This was a lovely sequence of events in changing my attitude to how I approach the world. So the essence of Swami's teachings, and we get it in so many different ways, you have to start at home. You have to change your own conduct into an exemplary conduct. and the world becomes a happier place. The divinity will be revealed to you more frequently, the glimpses of divinity that we get, if our conduct is along noble lines and following, when we follow the dictates of our conscience. I think this is the lesson of life. It's the essence of spirituality for me, is to follow my conscience, and as Swami said, foster a sensitivity to your conscience and follow its dictates. You can never be wrong.
Wow.
That's really very powerful. And it's been so helpful to me. And I can now almost go into any environment and people can throw stuff at me. And I've learnt techniques to say, look, are there any other things I'm doing wrong? Rather than being defensive, I'm exploring to see if I can improve myself further. It's just a different attitude altogether that Swami's taken me on. The other aspect of Swami's...
So the things got sorted out with the opposition?
Oh, yes. Oh, look, the problem still occurred, but what got sorted out is my anxiety. The world went on with its play.
But you knew how to handle it.
I knew how to handle it and to find peace in the most challenging circumstance.
Wow.
And that's really listening to the voice of God. Swami says that we can experience the divinity daily in two ways. Every day, each one of us. Firstly, it's the prompting of conscience. That is the voice of God. When we feel uncomfortable about something we may have done or said, or expressed something improperly, and we feel a little discomfiture, that is the prompting of the divine, originating from your soul center. The other aspect is when you love someone or something, that love is not your love, it's God's love, for God is love.
Yes.
And that's rather nice to know. I've watched myself, I'm observing myself respond to my self-giving love, whether it's to the dog or to my wife or to a neighbour or whatever, and I'm immediately switching my mind to realise that that is an expression of divinity.
So you divinise everything.
That's the effort. That's the focus. I can't do it all the time. Otherwise I might be a realised soul.
But I think that's a very, very beautiful experience, and you cannot go wrong in anything that you do.
Yes. It's continued practice. When we're dealing with more challenging personalities in workplaces or in political environments or wherever, or in social environments, you may have difficulty loving, but try a different approach. Try one of the aspects of love, which is respectfulness. Respect the good that person is. Now, Swami says, everyone's inherently good, that wrong action comes about as a result of lack of knowledge. If people knew better, they wouldn't conduct themselves improperly. Now, that allows you to stop judging. If you look at a person that way, you have sympathy for their lack of knowledge, rather than a feeling of judgment towards their wrong action.
You pray for them.
Yes, it's a shift of compassion towards a person when you realise they don't have the higher knowledge, the higher wisdom that would lead them to better conduct.
Wow. And I reminded of Mother Teresa, who said that if you judge people, you'll have no time to love them.
Yes. Yes. And everyone has their strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
But our task is to look at our own weaknesses, not others.
Yes. Wow.
And then we can inspire others, actually.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
This is an important part of leadership, actually, is to be respectful to everyone. And and firstly to be the example. A leader has to be the example, has to exhibit integrity, has to have a reputation of integrity.
Yes, to be. Yes. As Swami used to say, to be, then to do, and then to tell.
Yes, that's right.
Wow. So this harnessing this power of love is something that has become so much a part of you now. So much something that you practice daily in life after you came to Bhagwan. And I think this is a process that goes on. Yes. You discover every day what love can do.
Now, when I walk through the airport, I try to make three people happier.
Wow.
It's just an exercise for me.
Wow.
The consequence is I might make someone happier, but really it's helping me to keep my mind on the higher principle, the highest principle,
that
God resides in every person. So I look for opportunities to engage with someone and speak sweetly and kindly and give a loving expression.
Wow.
That person does get elevated, but so do I. I've learned how important this aspect is. You know, Swami said that we create our own life experience.
Yes.
That if we approach someone with irritability in our mind, that irritability will be inescapably projected onto our face.
Yes.
We cannot help it. We take great pleasure in reading the other person's moods, state of mind. My friend was very irritable today. My friend was very happy and excited. He didn't say anything, but it was written. The state of the mind is you're unable to hide the state of your mind. So if I approach people with some irritability, immediately I get that irritability back. If I approach them in a positive light, confident, a loving approach, then immediately that will be reflected back to me, and wherever I go, I will find the world a loving place.
Yes, you create that.
You create your own life experience, and that stops you complaining about life and other people. You know that when you create your own life experience, that you'd better start getting your mind in order.
Yes. In fact, you slowly come to the understanding and realization that if something unpleasant is happening to you, it is what you have created.
Yes.
Sometimes there was some lack of love in something that you have done, and it's probably coming back.
Yes. It doesn't all come back immediately.
Yeah.
But whenever I'm just in that mindset, whenever something negative happens, even if I stub my toe, I say, what did I do wrong? Have I done anything that would cause that small bit of pain?
Yes.
So it's just a question of a state of mind.
Wow. In fact, you know, when you are all the time in love, you're vibrating in the most beautiful frequency of the universe. You're vibrating the highest frequency of the universe, the frequency with which the universe was created. Mm. And that's the reason why your world has to become beautiful. Mm. I think people can relate to that. I think it'll show in everything that we do. So it's really wonderful that this whole thing is, you're trying to make it alive in your life, in everything that you're doing. So this is the first lesson. So I know you can go on talking about love for another 1 hour.
Yes,
but I have to move on, unfortunately, because the clock is ticking away. So tell us, what is the second lesson that has got so imprinted in your mind after we came to Bhagwan?
This too is a great enrichment. My father was a very righteous person. My mother was loving. That was her key attribute. My father was righteous. I think this must happen a bit. And he was a wonderful example. And the Christ's teachings and the Christian religion is heavily saturated with teachings about righteousness.
Yes.
But when I came to Swami and started to read his discourses, it gave me a much deeper understanding. The concept of dharma, righteousness is much richer and all-encompassing. It goes far beyond just doing a right action, because it's got to do with right thinking, right feeling. It has a great deal to do with duty, your duty in your stage of life, to be a good student, a good child, a good parent, a good grandparent, a good employee, a good employer, a good citizen. It takes you into the full, all facets of life and creates a concept of obligation to behave in a particular way. And so it's given my concept of righteousness, it's just exploded its meaning into a much wider context.
Wow.
And one of the most powerful teachings that Swami has given me through one of his books, Dharmavahini.
Dharmavahini. Yes, Swami's own writing.
Yeah, his own writing, the story of Dharma. I read a passage where Swami said, Dharma empowers you, Dharma protects you, Dharma brings with it its own reward.
Yes, dharmo rakshati rakshitah, in Sanskrit, where righteousness protects the right.
Yes, that's right. And that gives one great confidence if you practice righteousness, dharma, in your daily life. You know that you're going to be protected.
Have you experienced this?
I have a business story, in fact, if that's
okay. Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, please. Do share that.
Yes, well, many years ago, I'm a property developer, and we built an office building, 7-story office building in Wollongong City. We were nearing completion, and I had a venture with a couple of other fellows, and we just put some small amount of capital in, and we were able to buy some land easily, and started building. The building was almost complete. And our financier became insolvent,
mm-hmm.
and was not able to make the last payment. And then that coincided with a collapse in the office market and a bit of a downward cycle in the economy. Now, the net effect was that we're unable to make the last payment to the builder and from that company that we set up. And the value of the property was less than the cost of the building. It just so happened that sometimes these things happen in property cycles.
Yes.
And so we're in great difficulty. And my partner said, well, look, my wife and I had 50%, and I said to my partner, we have to do something here. And they said, well, look, these things happen. We're not going to, shareholders, we don't want to put any more in. This is external circumstances. We'll just have to let that company go, become insolvent. But what that meant was that the builder would not receive his last major payment, very substantial sum, and most of his all of his tradesmen would not be paid, and he wasn't a builder, a major corporate, so they couldn't absorb it. So it would have been a domino effect of people falling over. Now, this was 2 years after I'd come to Swami, and I was inspired by his teachings on Dharma. So I stared at the ceiling every night for a month until I couldn't bear it any longer. And so I got the builder and all of his sub-trades in a room, and I said, here's the problem we've got. The company has no money. The shareholders aren't prepared to put any in. We're sorry about this circumstance, but I said, I'm prepared personally to endeavour to pay you all with interest. But you'll have to wait, because I haven't got much at the moment. I'll have to sell properties, and I'll have my personal properties, and I have to sell everything I've got. Now, it took 22 months, and we paid everyone off.
You did that?
Yes, I did that. Paid everyone off with interest.
With your own money?
Yeah. It took about 22 months.
Oh, my God.
It was about 1.7 million. Back in 1980, mid-80s, that was a lot, actually.
Oh, my God.
And I was just broke, but happy. I paid everyone off, and my conscience was clear. Because I thought, if I was going to make profit, if the building was profit, project was profitable, I was going to make profit. In this case, the building, the project collapsed, and other people were going to be hurt, and I just couldn't live with that. Now, after I'd paid the last payment, I got a call from a major corporate investor who said, we're interested in getting into property development, subdivision of broadacre land. Our directors are keen on this. We're not developers. We've asked around the district and we've chosen you. Do you want to be involved? And I said, look, I'd be very interested, but I haven't got any cash. I was flat broke. And they said, oh, don't worry. They said, we'll provide all of the money. We'll pay you a management fee and we'll share profits with you 50-50. Are you interested? I said, well, as a matter of fact, do you know what? In the next 5 years, I got 10 times more than I'd paid out of my own resources.
Wow.
Dharma brings with it its own reward. That proved that to me unreservedly. It's a law of life.
Fantastic. You have to just take that road. People many times get fidgety about taking that road, thinking, you know, how can I do this? You know, this will be, in a worldly way, it will be a stupid thing to do, putting your own money in, you know, these things happen in the market and all that. But you just need to have that faith. I think that is where you have to operate from the heart and not from the mind.
I think if I hadn't come to Swami, I would have just let the company go. But he'd elevated my consciousness to a higher state.
Wow. And you had peace of mind.
I had peace of mind.
Even though you had like paid everything that you had.
Yes. Well, you know, Swami said you have to develop a sensitivity to your conscience. It's very subtle. Whispering. But you have to develop such a sensitivity that if you do the wrong thing, it almost shouts at you.
Yes.
Foster that sensitivity to that inner voice.
Wow. That's amazing. It again connects to what you mentioned before. Follow your conscience.
Mm.
Follow the master, as Bhagavan used to always say. Face the devil.
Yes.
Fight to the end and finish the game. And the game will end very beautifully.
Yes.
Once you're following the master.
Well, the third item.
Yes.
Really relates to the fact that is the matter of God residing within.
Hmm.
Now, I didn't have this concept at all in my Christian upbringing. Even though it's clearly stated in the Bible, but it wasn't taught that we're born sinners, and that God is external.
You have to look up somewhere.
Yes,
you have to think that he exists outside of you.
Some great white, with a great white bearded fellow lolling in the clouds, and maybe you would experience the divinity in some way. I had a confused mind about what the divinity was. As for God being the totality, I had no comprehension of this. And so it wasn't part of my cultural upbringing, it wasn't part of my religious upbringing. And so faced with Vedantic philosophy, it was really quite challenging. It took some time for me to grasp it, and my rational, pragmatic mind needed to have some concept of how this could be. Now, that came in a flash one day when I read Swami's advice. Brahma is energy. Energy is Brahma. Straight away, my mind went, to the E equals MC squared equation that matter is no more than energy, and that the solidity of matter is an illusion, and that the whole of creation is just a complex array, divinely complex and beautiful array of energy.
Just Shakti, just energy.
Yes. And in those few words, Brahma is energy. Suddenly, science and spirituality in this limited mind came together, and I could accept wholesomely Vedantic philosophy that all is one, that each one of us is just a spark of the divine, part of the divine play. Each one of us is a wave of love on the ocean of love.
Wow. Amazing. But how did this help you practically in your life, in your personal life, social life, professional life? Because this understanding is great. But how do we live this in our daily routine life?
I think that's probably the biggest challenge, is to try and keep that awareness. Once you accept it philosophically, then you have to keep it in the forefront of your mind. I think our biggest enemy on this matter is the massive sensory input into our minds from our five senses. That is relentless input into our minds. And that confuses. The mind is just a computer. It's not the individual. But it's like it clogs up the mind and won't, and we lose our concept. We can't hold that concept of the all-pervading nature of God. And I think that's why meditation is always a great tool. Stilling the mind, reduce the sensory inputs is a very helpful part of spiritual practice. There are some other thoughts I've had.
Sure.
When I look at some of these techniques, one of them, as I mentioned earlier, is practicing to see the divinity in the other.
Yes, that is what is the oneness.
Yes. And when I see a kindly gesture, when I see someone strive and succeed, when I see the beauty in nature or the love of a mother, all of these things now remind me that this is the divinity expressing itself. Even in society as a whole. Society as a whole is an expression of divinity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that is a very, very important point that you're saying. Many times we don't see divinity in society.
Yes.
Swami mentions that chain of Srishti.
Yes.
Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti and Parameshti.
Yes.
Where Swami talks about this cosmic cycle of individual, society, nature and God, how everything is connected and how we should see the cosmic cycle, the cosmic consciousness in everything. And I was tempted to say this when you mentioned that, you know, we have to see divinity in society. If you can tell me how you are able to do it, give me one or two instances. I think that would be something very, very powerful for us to ruminate on.
Well, I do it in bite-sized chunks.
Oh, sure.
You know, just it's not a big
state
of mind.
Yeah, little
just
ways.
It's in my momentary interactions with people.
Yes,
is the most powerful part. My first part is having a deep respect for everyone. Really deep respect. And one of the things that's very important for me is the concept of equality. God resides equally in the heart of all beings. Now, this is very easy for an Australian, because in Australian culture, the sense of equality is very strong. You know, we're all equal in Australia. And if you try to pop your head up a bit too high, there could be trouble coming. Just the nature of our culture. Mm. So the concept of equality was quite easy for me. It's part of our Australian culture that we're all equal. I just have to move it and say we're all equal before God,
yes,
in God. So that's very helpful.
So you were saying in bite-sized ways you have been trying to do this.
Yes, well, it's just in my interactions with people. I look to be respectful for everyone.
Yes.
When I see those anything that has beauty to it, I must say that what's happened of recent years is that when I see that kindly gesture and I get a revelation that that's the divine at work, I'm immediately in bliss tears, immediately in tears. Now, my son said, "Dad, before you came to Sai Baba, I had never seen you cry." And he said, "Since that time, you've never stopped."
So what sort of...
But they're bliss tears, you know,
tears of joy.
When I see the dance of divinity expressing itself. Sometimes you're challenged and it takes you a while to get your mind out of an instant negative thought and back into the, into looking for the good. And I see, I'm beginning more and more too to, when I have a setback, to say, what am I to learn out of this? This is a divine lesson for me. There's got to be some learning aspect to this. So even a negative thing that happens, I'm more and more seeing that as a message from God, a message from the divine consciousness, the all-pervading consciousness telling me something.
I think that's a very powerful mantra to live in life. I think then you'll never have a day of sadness in life.
Yes. We have moments of sadness, but hopefully not a day.
Yeah. You come out of it very quickly.
Yes, that's right. You overcome those natural feelings that the body is hardwired to deliver.
Yeah.
I'm also also moved by the beauty of nature.
And you see a lot of it in Australia.
I see the grandeur, the complexity, the beauty.
And you're in a seaside city.
Yes, and I see divinity. I see such majesty and beauty and order in the apparent chaos in nature, you know, the randomness, but I see a great order and beauty. So that's very, and in fact, I like to get out and do a bushwalk, serious bushwalk, 5 hours in serious bush, once a month. I like to do that. It's just part of keeping me...
Just a spiritual exercise
for
you.
Yes, it's a spiritual exercise, actually. Yes. And in fact, with the Sai youth in Australia, occasionally I take them on a walk into the bush with me. We call it God in Nature Walk.
Wow.
And then we stop every hour and we have a small reading of Swami's on God in Nature. And we talk about that a bit and then we move on. So it's just another... way of expressing
the whole perspective of how you treat everything around you changes, isn't it?
Yes.
Everything, you respect everything around you.
Yes.
And
yes.
If you go back to Indian culture, that is what the sages and seers of ancient India also told us. They always told us to revere Mother Earth, nature as Mother Earth. I think once you have that level of respect, and then you will also learn to treat nature with much more reverence and not exploit it mindlessly.
Yes. Now, one of the other ways I found, Swami, this is in our language. Swami said there is only one language, the language of the heart.
Yes.
Okay. What is that language? Interrogate it a bit further. Now, Swami says, I am in you in the form of the five values, and when you see them being practiced or hear them being spoken of, they will be automatically drawn out. Now look at the power of this. That means that you can go and go to speak with anyone and talk about the higher ideals of life, and the other person will be engaged immediately because you're drawing out their inner knowledge, which is the highest wisdom, divine wisdom, in every human heart. It will be drawn out. And we need to have that confidence that this can happen. Could I tell you an
sure.
How much
longer? Yeah, you can take 5 minutes.
Please. Okay. This is an interesting, this aspect of having confidence in people's inherent goodness and ability to draw it out
yeah.
is a very important aspect
absolutely.
Of keeping your mind on the oneness, the all-pervading oneness of God. I spoke at a centre in Bathurst, west of Sydney, and there was a devotee there who happened to be a lecturer at Orange Campus of Sydney University. That's out in the country, Orange, quite away from Sydney, and they have their agricultural economics is one of the courses run there. And so this chap said, look, I've spoken to my dean, and I've got an opportunity to have a 90-minute session with my Year 3 agricultural economics students on values. And he said, I haven't been able to find anyone I would have confidence in talking. So he said, I've heard you today, will you come? And I said, well, look, I'm not an educator. But he said, no, I want you to come. You, what I heard today is what I want you to tell
okay.
the students. So to cut a long story short, I ended up flying out and when I got there, the dean and this chap said, look, we've got 90 students, mostly boys, and they're interested in rugby and girls, he said. And he said, you might find that you don't hold their interest. So don't be too worried if you have to finish up halfway through. At least we will have tried. So I was well armed and prepared and confident based on Swami's advice that if I speak the values, they will be automatically drawn out. So I started in very secular language and touched their buttons relating to the fact that they would want to be successful in life, in their careers as consultants or in agricultural businesses or whatever. But I started out saying, whether or not you succeed in life will depend on how you conduct yourself personally. That's my message. I could go home now, and if you just remember that, but now I'm going to go into some detail. In the end, I got into a very spiritual discussion on values, halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
The questions went into lunch hour. There was intense interest, and the dean had to stop. And 2 weeks later, he rang me and said, look, we have students do it. We have a class evaluation of our lecturers and any guest speakers, just to see how the class viewed them. This is a standard procedure in our university. And he said, I'd like you to know that the ranking for your talk was the highest ever recorded at the university.
Wow.
Now, it's all nothing to do with my oratory capability, but everything to do with the topic. Because once we got into values, they were all experts, and it came out. And it just gives me confidence that if we get the right start in any society, no matter how secular-minded people are, that if we get our language right and get off on the right foot, then we will strike a chord when we're talking about values.
Absolutely. Because I think in every heart there is love.
Yes.
And as Swami said, there is no one who is an atheist. Mm-hmm. Because is there anyone who doesn't want love in this world? Is there anyone who says, I don't want truth? Mm. I think truth and love are universal, yes. And everybody can relate to them. Yes. And
well,
that is the reason why, if you know how to communicate through these, you can touch anyone.
Yes. Every human being loves to love and loves to be loved. Every human being will insist on being spoken to truthfully.
Yes.
Every human being will respect right action.
Yes.
When you get down to it.
Yes.
They want to be at peace and they reject violence.
Yes.
So those values are there, and it's very fertile ground.
Absolutely.
It's just that when we first engage, we shouldn't be talking spirituality. That will come in the second phase.
Correct.
The first phase has to be just practical lessons of life.
Yes.
In secular language, and then we can step into, gradually lead in to quite deep spiritual discussions for the first time in their lives for many people.
Wow. That's wonderful. And I think that is such a revealing experience for you, and perhaps something you can take it forward, because you are someone who have been endeavoring to practice Swami's teachings in daily life, and when you speak to people from your own experience, it comes with conviction. Yes. And if you're able to connect to youngsters, and if you're able to communicate in a language that they can understand, especially to the younger generation, I think you're doing a great service, and I would say that this is something perhaps you should do more often, because that is where we'll be contributing to making the world a better place.
Yes. The world will change through education and human values.
Absolutely.
So we know what our marching orders are.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mr. Neville Fredericks. And frankly to tell you, I would not want to end this conversation, because there is so many precious pearls coming out, and I know there is much more stored in your heart, and we have been able to only just touch a few salient things and through one or two instances, but I think I know each thing is a volume, each thing is a huge chapter, each thing is just getting revealed to you more and more, each of these lessons of love, of right action, of oneness. And perhaps I hope and pray that we meet again and we dwell more on this when you are here in Prashanti next time. And thank you so much for coming to the studios, and you have made this Thursday Live session special. Swami has made it special through you. So,
well, thank you, Vishu. It's been wonderful to be with you and your listeners, and may His grace be felt by all.
Yes, be with all of us.
Yes.
Today, towards the end of the session, you know, Swami's discourse was played, and in the end, Bhagwan spoke a few words, and those, if you remember, were so powerful. I thought it would be nice if we listen to that again as we conclude this session.
You all are in Kingdom of Sai. You all are in Sai's home. You all are in Sai's light. You all are in Sai's heart. I will bless you in the holy night. This is your right. Love is my form, truth is my breath, bliss is my food.
So that is how the session ended in Mandir today, dear listeners, and it was, as you heard, such a powerful way to bring the Christmas celebrations to a close on today. The Christmas celebrations go on, there are still programs tomorrow and perhaps day after. But the Christmas day, 25th of December, has been such a wonderful day. And you have Bhagwan saying you, I bless you. I bless you in the divine light. And he says that he's there with us, in us. And he says that it is our right. Yet, yes, Bhagwan always said that the only thing on which we have full right is his love. And that is the only thing we should aspire for also. Because that is the only thing that can liberate us. So thank you so much for being with us all through the day. As always, if you have any queries or comments, you can write to us, listener@radiosai.org. It's been a very beautiful Thursday. We are so grateful to Swami. This year, Christmas came on a Thursday, and so we had this chance to be with you, connect with you, heart to heart, love to love, throughout the day. And in the end, as a sign off, I would once again like to thank you for continuing to write to us, to tell us what you feel about the programs. Each one of the letters that we receive, each one of the emails that we receive is an email from Swami. That's how we take it. Whether it is a positive feedback or something we have to improve upon, it is His love, it is His direction. So thank you so much for being with us. And even as I sign off now, I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. You're going to listen to a drama, The Spirit of Christmas, which was presented by children from overseas on 27 December 2010 at Prashant Nilayam. So the Christmas spirit on Radio Sai, the Christmas fervor on Radio Sai goes on, carries on. Thank you so much. Finally, a sweet goodbye and loving sai ram from Prashant Nilayam. Jai Sai Ram.